The Path to Unconditional Love, Chapter 24, About Suffering, Diligence, and Love. How did you come to the teacher? One of the new sisters asked Aliona. The priestess looked around at all of us, and seeing the lively interest in our eyes, smiled. I was 18. She began. I didn't stay in the creative group for long. After a week of intensive training, I was sent to help at a seminar in another city. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know which city I was going to, and I didn't know which mentor I was going to help. Actually, it would be more correct to say that I did not know which mentor would help me, since there was still little help from me at that time. I was in the dark, but that didn't scare me at all. Inside, there was a firm confidence that I was moving in the right direction. I felt that everything was going according to God's plan, as if an unknown power was guiding me. I can explain why I had no fear despite my young age. From the very beginning of my acquaintance with the school, when I was only 11 years old, I never had any doubts about the school or the teacher. My heart felt the truth that I had longed to know. Therefore, I was not afraid of the unknown. But on the contrary, there was a great confidence in God. It's a very unusual feeling when you don't know anything, yet you're sure. Aliona's words brought back memories. As the priestess spoke, I remembered what my journey to the teacher had been like. For me, it all happened much later, and I sometimes found myself regretting it. I was sorry that so much time had been lost, that I had been under illusions for a long time, trying to live according to the laws of society. At the same time, the feeling that Aliona was talking about was very familiar to me. Understanding that an unknown power was leading and guiding me. I'll never forget trying to make it to the train station. The priestess continued. I'd been given my tickets 2 hours before the train left, but the journey itself took 2 hours. There wasn't even 5 minutes left to pack. An ordinary person in such a situation would not even make an attempt to begin packing. But it wasn't about me. I deliberately took this risk, because if I hadn't made the effort then, I probably wouldn't be telling you this now. The task was to collect books and objects of power to bring them to the people at the seminar. They were of a huge value, and it was my mission to deliver them. I was escorted to the metro station by a girl who was also studying in a creative group. But in the subway, I turned for help to a young man whom I intuitively chose from all the people present in the car, since I understood that I would not be able to change trains with this load. I looked at my watch. The 3 minutes runs from station to station seemed like eternity to me. I could feel time shrinking. At that moment, I realized my powerlessness and inability to influence events. My condition turned into a frantic prayer to God for help. And thanks to the young men who could not refuse my blatant request, I managed to drag 4 bundles of books, a large box, and a bag of things to the train station. The departure of the train was delayed for 5 minutes for some unknown reason, incomprehensible for everyone else. It was clear to me who had delayed the train and why. As the young man and I reached the platform, the train slowly began to move. I hopped into the last train and held the bundles of books. With tears in my eyes, I thanked the guy with a silent nod and waved. That's how, with God's help, I managed to catch that train. I remembered myself again, how I turned to God for help when I missed my train, and I was put on another one with absolutely no money in my pocket, no things, no food. For after my sincere plea to God for help, well-wishers began to appear around. I remembered how the problem was surprisingly solved earlier, when I had to urgently find a substitute for myself in the video rental to go to my first retreat. It was the Moscow-Astrakhan train. Alyona continued her story. I'd never been to this city before, and I didn't know much about geography, because there was too much theory in high school that didn't interest me. I loved to learn everything in practice from my own experience. Only now can I boast of knowing where various cities and countries are located, because I have been traveling around the world for 20 years helping people. Oh, you've been traveling all over the world for 20 years? The new girl who had asked the priestess the first question asked in surprise. There was genuine admiration in her voice. Are we going to do that too? Everyone has their own mission next to the teacher. Alyona smiled. And he gives everyone the tasks that develop them and benefit people. My mission is to spread his knowledge around the world. I also have this feature in my horoscope. A unique fate is waiting for each of you next to the sage. And it was destined for you even before birth. So do not evaluate and do not compare. Each one has their own path, and each path is unique and beautiful. Only in serving the teacher and the people can you experience real happiness and fullness of life. And I sincerely wish you to go all the way to the end. And how did you know that this is your path? The new girl asked with keen interest. What happened in Astrakhan? At that time, the only thing I knew about Astrakhan was that there are large, green-striped, and very tasty watermelons growing there. Alyona replied, but this city has become very important in my life. Of course, not because of the Astrakhan watermelons, but because Astrakhan became my starting point for a meeting with the teacher. A mentor met me there. I was touched because she was my first mentor. It was she who opened up the future for me. At the diagnostics of predestination that I had at my first seminar. And she told me that my destiny as a priestess was to be close to the teacher. At the time, it seemed unreal and unattainable. But all my subsequent actions were clearly directed there. My heart was filled with joy that I would be next to my mentor, who, at one of the seminars, gave me the blessing to go to the creative group. And then, I couldn't believe my eyes. It turned out that for several years, my mentor guided me at a distance, periodically visiting my city with seminars. She was preparing me for the most important event of my life. Aliona's story captured me. With every word she said, I found more parallels with my life. And this was despite the fact that our paths were different. But the sensations, the feelings that we experienced, they were similar. And even situations. I remembered very well how I had received many divine signs on the eve of my meeting with the teacher. It was as if something was leading me in the right direction, too. And it all started with that fortune teller who told me that the teacher was waiting for me. I remember vividly that rainy autumn day when I specially came to a fortune teller in a neighboring city, even without understanding what exactly I wanted to know. We were in Astrakhan for 5 days. Aliona continued her story. There were two of us, assistants. The mentor trained both of us in real time and in specific situations. For during the day, we had seminars. In the evening, we had to study yoga complexes and other practices. And the next day, we had to conduct classes with people. Such intensive training with practice gave me a powerful impetus to acquire useful spiritual skills. Many years later, I can truly say that only experience can be called real knowledge. And knowledge that is not backed up by practice is just information. This can be compared to reading books about sex or viewing pictures with poses. We can read about it as much as we want. But only by having sex can we find out what it really is. With each spiritual practice, I felt myself growing stronger inside. It didn't work out all at once, but I tried. I liked working with people. Now I understand that the most valuable thing is the experience, even if it was negative, since mistakes are lessons for the future. Because of your mistakes, you realize that you can't do this, and the next time you will do it differently. Thanks to experience, a person becomes wiser. Next to my mentor, in 5 days, I gained such a rich experience, which is impossible to get in a lifetime. If you live like an average person who is limited to the standard scenario of life, school, institute, family, work, pension, and old age, with its well-known ending for everyone. Ever since I was a child, I have felt a protest against this scenario. Outright rebellion and an unwillingness to live like everyone else. But it is impossible to become an individual if you are under the influence of society. And no matter how hard you try, it is impossible to break out of this matrix alone. My soul was searching for someone who was already outside the matrix. Intuitively, I felt that there was a way out of the maze of life's problems. An unknown power led me to the teacher. Aliona's every word echoed in my soul. I remembered the protest that the university had aroused in me when I had succumbed to social paradigms and went to get a higher education. I remembered myself realizing that I did not want to spend my old age doing nothing but spinning my wheels trying to make a living. I realized that I didn't want to play the life scenario imposed by society, marriage, family, children, etc. Meanwhile, the priestess continued her story, and I hung on her every word. There was an invisible rivalry between me and the other assistant, which didn't let us relax. Aliona said, each tried to be better than the other in absolutely everything. In many ways, thanks to this struggle, my strong qualities were revealed, which determined my future fate. And your first mentor, what was she like? Beside her, I was very interested in everything. I watched her put on her makeup using small, decorative details. In her makeup that ordinary woman can't afford, because it attracts the attention of others. And not every woman can stand the assessment of other people. But the mentor had such inner strength that she could easily afford to stand out of the crowd. I watched her with great awe, preparing herself before going out, praying and tuning to everyone who came to the seminar. I looked at the mentor during the lectures, and in my imagination, I tried to repeat the gestures, facial expressions, and intonation. I wanted to be like her. I also tried to memorize the speech patterns, but this was the most difficult thing for me. I thanked God for the opportunity to help and learn. And you began to travel with the mentor to seminars? The new sister asked. At first, I thought that this would happen. But 5 days after the end of the seminar, the mentor said that the most important journey of my life was waiting for me. She looked at me with love and handed me a bus ticket to Sochi. Aliona's story made me look back at the path that had preceded my meeting with the teacher. It was full of realizations. It was full of signs. There were real miracles and divine help in it. Now that I had heard the priestess's story, all these small, disparate fragments had come together into a single picture. And when this happened, I felt very grateful to God for giving me the opportunity to meet the teacher and follow the path of spiritual development. Each conversation with the teacher was a revelation for me, during which complex questions received simple, easy to understand answers. And at the same time, the more questions we asked, the clearer became the picture of the world. We penetrated into the deep meaning of things, and there was a feeling of extreme clarity and transparency. The teacher gave many examples, and this helped to perceive the truth from different angles. During one of the walks along the mountain trails, we talked about the meaning of the existence of humanity. The question had been bothering me, as well as many other members of our group, for a long time. To be honest, I had fragmentary judgments in my head, some of which had been drawn from my childhood. I started asking myself this question as a teenager. Why do people live on Earth? It is clear that each person can have their own goals in life. But if you look globally, is it even possible to give an accurate answer to this question? My critical, tenacious mind, accustomed to relying on logic, then searched in vain for answers. Teacher, tell me, what is a person created for? I asked when we stopped at the top of a bubbling, noisy waterfall during another walk. The water was rushing down from the stone ledge, shimmering in the setting sun like a thousand diamonds. The moon and the other planets, the sage said, looking up at the bright sky, the crescent moon barely visible in the east, feed on the subtle energy they receive from humans. Humanity exists to feed the planets. Most people. At that moment, I distinctly remembered our evening walk with Indra, the mentor's assistant, who had asked Alessa and me to scold the moon. Then, my sister and I were in shock, and Indra had to explain to us what was going on. But we never fully understood. And now the teacher started talking about it. And how does this happen? Asked Serena, who was standing nearby and, like the other students, hung on the sage's every word. So, only humans can emit this subtle energy? That's right, replied the teacher. Only beings with a certain level of mental development have the ability to suffer and to worry. These are very strong emotions that the moon and other planets need so much. For example, under the primitive communal system, when people lived in caves, they could not provide food for the planets. For this to be possible, their level of development had to be raised. So, you mean that someone helped man to raise this level? Did humans evolve from apes for a reason? Yes, the planets are incommensurably larger and immeasurably more powerful than man. They discuss between each other, with the sun and with the stars, and decide to send the sages to earth. Christ, Buddha, Rigen Japo, and others, so that they can push people in development, increase their intellectual and spiritual level. So the sages, at different times, came to earth and began their work. And among the monkeys with sticks, for example, they found those who, despite great difficulty, could understand something. Even if they only understood little, at that time, it was enough. Among other monkeys, they became great leaders, so people gradually evolved. They learned how to work iron, make very intricate and complex objects, built houses, explored the world, and discovered electricity, invented machines, and so on. So, progress was made. Well, to keep the mouths of these wise men shut, people decided to crucify them so that people would not simply believe in them. We listened to the teacher, trying not to miss a single word. His voice, amazing, deep, and imbued with powerful energy, flew freely over the mountainside, intertwined with the sound of the falling water. And now, under the auspices of Christ, social paradigms are beginning to spread, slowing down true spirituality. The teacher continued, "All concepts are being perverted, turned upside down. What kind of spirituality can we talk about if the fires of the Inquisition are burning? And what does Christ have to do with it? People just started using his name to justify their own anger, their negativity, their weakness and stupidity."
So, were all the sages sent to earth in order to raise people to another level? I asked.
"Yes," the teacher nodded. "They perform an important task. They help people to move in the process of evolution, to develop their technologies. But the sages are incarnated in order to pull the bulk of people out of darkness and ignorance. And not only that, they have one more mission: to help people free themselves from the wheel of samsara. Even if they can help just two or three people, the chosen ones are extremely few. After all, for the existence of people on earth, 99% of them must be mediocre."
"What will happen to these two or three people?"
"They will also become sages, like Buddha. Such people are already born with an understanding of the truth. Usually, no one teaches them for a long time. For example, Aurobindo. He met a yogi who gave him recommendations. Then, Aurobindo turned off the inner dialogue, tuned in to God, and enlightened in a couple of days. 2 days were enough for him to get a push and achieve knowledge. And then, he began to spread this knowledge."
"But these are wise men, and how can ordinary people comprehend the truth?"
To understand the truth, you need to meet a teacher, and it is necessary to be ready for this meeting in order to be able to hear and perceive the higher knowledge.
After saying this, the teacher gave me a meaningful look, which immediately flashed through my memory in a series of bright flashes of situations and numerous signs that preceded my trip here. I felt completely tuned in to the teacher and realized that he had high hopes for me, that he saw in me the person who could hear and perceive.
To hear, you need to be aware.
The sage continued, you must remember yourself at every moment of time. When you listen, you need to have a wish to hear. And a person should listen all his life until he dies. Only then will he understand something. For example, I had one student who always said, I want to be enlightened. But when the spiritual practices began, he said, I thought that enlightenment was near. But then it turned out that I was only at the very beginning of the path. And it was at this moment that he became one step closer to enlightenment, when he admitted that he still did not really know anything.
So we have to eliminate the sense of self-importance? Serena asked.
Yes, only then do we begin to receive all the answers directly from God. You need to be sincere, and then you will feel how freely the energy flows. You will not be afraid that your sense of self-importance will suffer. And then the spirits will answer you, and the birds will talk to you.
As we stood at the top of the waterfall, the sun's disk had already sunk lower, turning the sky into a different shade of orange. Just a little more, and it would disappear behind a mountain peak on the horizon. Dusk would fall, and night would come after it, bringing with it thick darkness and chill. We spent that night having settled down for a rest in one of the caves located not far from the waterfall. The teacher had a good sense of direction in the mountains and knew every corner of the place. Even if it was a corner where no human had ever set foot. The cave was large enough to accommodate 10 people in our group. It reminded me of the place where we lived at the retreat. There were sharp stone protrusions everywhere, dense clay rock underfoot, and water dripped here and there from the rocky vaults. Then, at the seminar, the need to sleep in such a cave caused surprise and fear. Now, I thought of the night ahead with pleasure as a great opportunity to connect with nature, to become a part of it for a while. I was not sleepy, and I was not the only one. There was energy everywhere. It fed us, gave us strength. At the exit of the cave, we lit a fire and sat around it to listen to the wisdom of the teacher again. The yellow flames danced on the stone walls and created an incredible play of light, which emphasized the magical, mystical atmosphere. We sat in silence for a while, listening to the twigs crackle in the fire. Outside, a bright crescent moon peered unceremoniously into the cave. Its cold light turned the mountain landscape blue, filling it with a shimmering glow. Everyone was waiting for the conversation to continue and was ready to greedily absorb the knowledge again. I was thinking about what I heard from the teacher today.
I have a question. People exist to feed the planets with their negative emotions and suffering. And what about animals? Can't animals suffer?
It is very difficult to make a beast suffer. But it is easy to make a man suffer. A person suffers all his life because he has a center of suffering and a center of pleasure in his brain. These are the levers that control the behavior of the common man. A person associates certain things with the pleasure center. For example, the instinct of reproduction, food, heat. Other things are associated with the center of suffering, hunger, cold, pain, and so on. And these centers, like a carrot and stick, drive a person around the wheel of suffering.
But what do we do to get out of this wheel?
We need to open up to God. If a person voluntarily accepts suffering and thinks,
"Here is some suffering that befell upon me. I will survive it."
Then these sufferings become human. And then the person begins to transform this suffering and thinks, "Why do I suffer? I have resentment, fear, anger, or something else that torments me." And by thinking in such a way, it is by this that a person reveals himself to God. He looks into the cause of his suffering and learns to transform himself, transform his view.
Teacher, then it turns out that our suffering is a good thing if we treat it correctly?
Yes, it is. Suffering and illness give a person the opportunity to turn to God. 80% of people came to the spiritual path seeking healing from diseases, from the evil eye and corruption, from the influence of black magicians. When a person is faced with serious health problems, he quickly begins to think about the meaning of his existence. And then, this person comes to people who can heal him and help him. He is healed and begins to follow the spiritual path. So, any disease is an opportunity to take a step towards God? Asked Brother Agni, who was sitting closest to the fire, throwing dry twigs into it every now and then. Diseases can be divided into acute and chronic. In any case, diseases are associated with energy draining. But if there is an acute disease, then it should be treated immediately with medications. And if it is chronic, then it can be cured only by changing the lifestyle. For example, a toothache is an acute disease. You just need to treat it. But chronic gastritis cannot be cured with pills. Here, You need to change your lifestyle.
And if a person cannot change lifestyle,
then the disease progresses.
And if he can't physically change something, for example, a person can be bedridden. That's why he leads a sedentary lifestyle, and he develops some kind of disease because of this.
Whatever the situation, a person should try. He must do everything possible to become a better person. A person should work hard on himself. The fact that he is trying to do something is already a lot. And if he does not stop these attempts, he will definitely get the result sooner or later.
This applies not only to overcoming diseases, but also to spiritual development, right?
Of course. You have to think like this. I can do anything. I have to be constantly tired, exhausted. I have to constantly make even more efforts. And if you do this every day, you will have more strength. You will overcome laziness and constantly engage in creativity. First, you will become active like Bruce Lee. And then, if you do not give up spiritual practices, you can achieve enlightenment and become Buddha. You must manifest as vividly as you can. And if you are praised, never get too excited. Do not relax and do not stop, because everything is based on your activity. Only diligent people can show their good qualities.
We talked and talked, and I wanted so much to stretch out the time to prolong this conversation as long as possible to gain more knowledge. Next to the teacher, time flew by so imperceptibly.
Teacher, give me some advice. Brother Agni said, how can I learn to love God? It takes a long time to learn to love God. This love has nothing to do with love for other people.
Realizing this, the monks sometimes need 40 years to comprehend this art. Each of them says, Lord, I am a sinner because I cannot love you constantly. I will learn to love you.
I understand, Brother Agni asked again, but what is the first thing to do? Get rid of fantasies and illusions. We need to stop dividing things and situations into bad and good, as we are usually used to. This is the behavior of laboratory rats, which are implanted with electrodes in different brain centers so as to control them. A person's electrodes are instincts and desires. Most people live in illusions. They deceive themselves, imagine things that are not really there. At first, they feel good about it, but then, when reality is presented to them, people suffer. To love God, you need to pray a lot, to make an effort. And every day, your feeling of love will be greater, at least a little bit.
Teacher, What else is needed to follow the truth except patience and diligence?
Flexibility and plasticity. Never listen to what people say, because they are moths flying into the light. They are fickle, and you cannot rely on them, as you can easily get burned. People are under illusions, and their opinions about what you should be are based on their misconceptions and stereotypes. In fact, you do not have to be anything. When you are in society, you can enter into a role and act according to it, and then leave one role and enter another. This is the flexibility of behavior. You just enter the role, but you do not become anything. At that moment, I remembered how on the way to the creative group, I fell behind the train. It seemed so long ago, in a previous life. I was not afraid then. I didn't want to cry at all, but inside, I had a calm confidence that everything would be fine. However, had I not stepped into the role of a terrified, sobbing girl at that moment, no one would have paid any further attention to me, and the station master would not have put me on another train without money and documents. When we finished our conversation, the fire had already burned down, and where the flames had danced earlier, the embers were now glowing beautifully, flaring up a little and then fading out again. It gave the impression that they were beautiful gems, accidentally forgotten in a cave by some fabulous mountain king. The short summer night was already flowing smoothly into morning. The sky on the horizon was no longer so dark. We came out of the cave and looked towards the mountains, and we couldn't look away. The space in front of us was covered with a white haze, and the cliff that began just behind the entrance to the cave was filled with a thick fog peering out through the tops of trees growing on the mountain slopes. It was as if a magical river of milk was flowing beneath us. "How beautiful!" Serena exclaimed, expressing everybody's admiration. We stood there, unable to take our eyes off the sight. "It is easy to see the aura through the steam and fog, which is why many magicians liked to look into the fog," the teacher said, and we all turned to look at him. "And if you look through the fog at the moon, and then blow, you'll see its aura." We looked up at the sky again. The crescent moon shone with a muted light that filtered through the flaky haze.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual.
opened free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website, www.amazonone.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.